Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good martinis today, which I'm guessing is surprising a lot of our listeners today, Jim. We could have easily gone bad, 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 and crazy, because, you know, anytime the Republican frontrunner promises to sue reporters for writing negative stories, people dig up a story where he's praising the Chinese and the Tiananmen Square situation from 1989, and he struggles and to disavow the former Grand Wizard of the KKK. It's not a very good weekend for conservatism, to say the least, but basically, we're taking a mental health day. And so we have three good martinis today, starting with what is always one of our most enjoyable activities, watching liberals fight with each other and get a taste of their own medicine. And in this case, it's just good news all the way around. For those of you who may not have heard, because not very many people watch them, MSNBC has canceled the Melissa Harris Perry show. They preempted her show for about 2 weeks straight. And as a result, she walked off the set just before the Iowa caucuses. 2 days later, according to the New York Times, an email became public in which Ms. Harris-Perry said she felt worthless to NBC executives, and after 2 weeks of her show being preempted so they could cover other news, an MSNBC spokesman confirmed Sunday that the network and Ms. Harris-Perry were parting ways. The best part, of course, is her rant, not on the air, but in a message where she said, quote, "I will not be used as a tool for their purposes. I am not a token mammy or little brown bobblehead. I am not owned by Lack, Griffin, or MSNBC. I love our show. I want it back." Regardless of where you work, if you send that out publicly, you're not getting your show back. And Melissa Harris-Perry is no exception. So, Jim, as we enjoy the fact that this got ugly, got public, and that both sides look bad, the best part, of course, is that Melissa Harris-Perry no longer has a national show. But before we say goodbye, let's take a listen to some of her greatest hits that we featured here on the Three Martini Lunch, beginning with when one of her guests was talking about what a hard worker incoming House Speaker Paul Ryan is.
I just want to pause on one thing, because I don't disagree with you that I actually think Mr. Ryan is a great choice for this role. But I want us to be super careful when we use the language hard worker, because, I mean, I actually keep an image of folks working in cotton fields on my office wall, because it is a reminder about what hard work looks like.
Then there was the MSNBC promo that you see hosts do once in a while, where she talked about who our kids really belong to.
We've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the households, then we start making better investments.
That's certainly the most dangerous, but here's my personal favorite, her interview with outgoing Attorney General Eric Holder.
You know, we call you the duck in Nerdland.
The duck?
We call you the duck. So in Nerdland, we say you have a very sort of placid and even way of presenting, but you are just working for justice underneath. Would you quack for us?
Jim... the crazy martini will be poorer in some ways without Melissa Harris-Perry, but America will be better.
Yeah, I had forgotten about the quack like a duck for me one. Look, there's actually kind of a valuable life lesson here. One is that, look, she had kind of been the shock jock. She had kind of been the one who you could count on to be the most shocking, most provocative, most sometimes tasteless or obnoxious. It was on her program that they mocked Mitt Romney's adopted grandchild, right?
I believe so.
All right, so there's that. There's the time she wore the tampons on her earrings. I don't think this elevates our discourse. I don't think it adds very much. But also, like, she really comes across as a very unpleasant person, unless you're Eric Holder. She basically, you make a comment like Paul Ryan is hardworking, and she'll suddenly turn this into this giant racial controversy. Well, here's the thing. People who are like that, who jump on every opportunity to take an issue and turn it into an unpleasant, uncomfortable racial controversy, to put words in people's mouths, to suggest that they had malign motives or that they meant to say something offensive to people. You know, like, she's really bad at this. But the good news is this eventually catch up to the point where nobody wants to work with these people, that you become a problem, that you become a walking time bomb. And she became that kind of an issue for MSNBC, which had the audacity to move her show to a weekend because nobody was watching it. Like, you know, this doesn't make for good television. You and I will watch the clips the day after and kind of laugh at her, and that's probably what she's best known for, but it didn't actually make people want to watch the show. I think there's a really good, interesting parallel, I'd argue, Greg, to Keith Olbermann, who has had a lot of TV gigs over the years. And there's always the same pattern that he's announced. Yes, we know he's a controversial person. Yes, we know some people don't like him and he's had some personality issues and all stuff. From what we hear, Keith Olbermann is an obnoxious human being who is a tyrant, enjoyable sometimes back in his SportsCenter days and when he talks about sports. But he is very tough to work with, very tough on his staff, just belligerent and obnoxious. Remember, he was going to go to Current TV and then he couldn't get along with Al Gore. And, you know, eventually people who have really difficult personalities, they don't rise forever. They run into trouble. People hate working with them. And this is, you know, kind of there are times it feels like the jerks always win. Well, actually, I think this is a good example. Like, life teaches you. No, it doesn't. The jerks, it catches up to them eventually. And that's one of the life lessons. Be a nice person. And Greg, you and I decided to be a nice person by having three good martinis today.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's got to make people happy. Cheer your spirits. You need this. People need this.
Let's go to the other good martini, the second good martini. And it was kind of depressing to watch briefly on Saturday night as Hillary Clinton not only won the South Carolina primary over Bernie Sanders, but won in dominating fashion, basically 3-1. And she actually has the lead now, Jim, in committed pledge delegates. It's not just the superdelegates putting her in the lead. And so, of course, the mainstream media once again saying, oh, we're closer and closer to this being all wrapped up. Super Tuesday might do it. Well, it might, but although Bernie Sanders is raking in a ton of money, so I don't think he's going anywhere for a while, so we'll see what happens in other states. But he's also got a brand new friend on the campaign trail, someone who's not only sticking it to Hillary Clinton in doing this, but sticking it to her former colleague at the Democratic National Committee, Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Here's Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard explaining why she's ditching the DNC to get on the campaign to feel the burn.
As a vice chair of the DNC, I'm required to stay neutral in Democratic primaries, but I cannot remain neutral any longer. The stakes are just too high. That's why today I'm endorsing Senator Bernie Sanders to be our next president and commander-in-chief of the United States. We need a commander-in-chief who has foresight, who exercises good judgment, and who understands the need for a robust foreign policy which defends the safety and security of the American people, and who will not waste precious lives and money on interventionist wars of regime change. Such counterproductive wars undermine our national security and economic prosperity.
Jim, how bad do you think someone has to be as a potential commander-in-chief for you to say unequivocally, Bernie Sanders would be so much better running our military?
See, I don't know if at some point Hillary Clinton ran over Tulsi Gabbard's cat. This might be kind of insulting to Gabbard to suggest that it's personal. But having said that, she could have endorsed Sanders at any time. And she kind of was making noise early on that she felt like the debate process was heavily skewed in favor of Hillary Clinton, that it was designed to minimize the impact of any of her challengers. She was, you know, kind of making noise. And of course, Debbie Wasserman Schultz didn't want to hear any of it. She had no interest in helping out. She was very dismissive of this. It was very clear the DNC was going to do everything it could to help Hillary Clinton. And Tulsi Gabbard was just not going to go along with this, not going to nod assent quietly and kind of play along with the what seems like a ruse. Now, Gabbard could have done this at any point. But look, this deal, it was a big win for Hillary Clinton in South Carolina. You're not hearing as much discussion about the Democratic race. It's kind of, fairly or not, the mainstream media and most folks are kind of writing off Bernie Sanders. And look, she's got the huge advantage of the superdelegates, and now that, you know, we're no longer in little states like Iowa and New Hampshire where he can do a little bit better. Well, here is Tulsi Gabbard timing it for maximum effect to give the Sanders supporters something to feel good about, something to kind of feel cheery, to say, hey, look, we got somebody. And like to do it in the most, you know, again, she didn't mention Hillary by name. But basically, you know, untrustworthy as a commander-in-chief, the choice is clear. I mean, this was a pretty rough assessment of Hillary Clinton. There was none of this, oh, we have two good choices and I'm leaning this way. Tulsi Gabbard made a very clear gesture, you could say, to Hillary Clinton. And this is, you know, you and I have praised her on this podcast before. Look, this is another case of Tulsi Gabbard showing political confidence. Because, look, in all odds, Hillary Clinton isn't going to be the Democratic nominee. And we know the Clintons don't just have an enemies list. They have an enemies Excel spreadsheet. They're going to remember this, and they're probably going to come after Tulsi Gabbard. And Tulsi Gabbard felt like, look, in the end, she had to stand for the candidate she thought was better. And that's Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, and there's got to be a Wasserman Schultz angle there, too. There's no love lost between those two. And obviously, as you mentioned, Wasserman Schultz has been very much pro-Hillary in this process, even if she hasn't said so explicitly. But interesting to watch. Tulsi Gabbard never exactly following the party line on some of these key issues. So let's go to the final good martini. And, Jim, this is on the heels of a decidedly bad martini that we had on Friday. And that's on the day after the Thursday debate, in which Donald Trump took a lot of shots. He reversed the narrative, or at least altered the narrative, by bringing out Chris Christie, his recently vanquished rival for the GOP nomination, down in Texas. And Christie endorsed him enthusiastically. He then went to a number of rallies with him in Texas and other states around the South. But then by Saturday evening, Trump was caught on a live mic after Christie had introduced him at a rally by saying, "Get on the plane and go home. It's over there. Go home." So a lot of folks are saying Christie has learned a lesson here. You were useful to Trump for about a day. That's all they really needed. You can go home now. And Trump supporters, of course, are saying, oh, no, he's just concerned about Chris Christie getting back to what he needs to get back to. But Jim, for a guy who's being branded bluntly in social media as Fat Judas, a lot of people saw this as delicious on Saturday.
Yeah, you know, look, for, you know, those of us who are unenamored with Trump, this was you know, not good news, but also extremely surprising news for all the times that Donald Trump had said on the trail that, you know, Donald Trump didn't know what he was doing, that electing him as a, you know, that nominating him is akin to handing in the presidency to Hillary Clinton. He was not equivocal. He did not really leave himself a lot of wiggle room, and he had a very awkward exchange and attempts to defend Donald Trump on you know, in TV appearances this weekend. So here's Trump. First of all, you know, as Christie says, he's been friends with Trump for 15 years. You also see he also refers to him as Mr. Trump.
Oh, yes.
Greg, do I call you Mr. Columbus?
Not usually, no.
And I don't really make you call me Mr. Garrity very often. So,
no.
There's something very odd about that dynamic there. For those of us who look at this as that actually, you know, Trump, that Christie meant what he said when he was critical of Trump. They're not really that close. It isn't really. This is a alliance of convenience, and then Trump just, you know, sees him as a an errand boy. The dismissive tone of that, go, you go home, get on the plane, just kind of plays to that. You and I would play the audio. There's a little bit of noise, but I put the link in the Jolt. People said, oh, he's just trying to help him get. No, there's the tone, the body language, everything there is very clear. You've done your job to get out of here. It is not warm and friendly between two old friends there. And that's where we are. Hope it was worth it, Christie. You know, you're stuck with him.
Well, he had to kick him back up to New Jersey so he could make room for Jeff Sessions to come in and endorse him on Sunday. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Columbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.